Listeners, we're talking to Maria Vittoria Finco, who is in Italy. Tell our listeners exactly where you are, Maria.
Hi, everyone. I am in Italy. I'm in North Italy. I am in Grigno, which is my hometown. It's in the province of Trento, so near Lake Garda, if you know where Lake Garda is.
Yes. So what we're going to be talking about is a group of cheeses from a company called Monte Trentini. Is this correct to say that they could be called Alpine cheeses?
It's true, yes, because we are in the mountains right now. So our company produces mountain cheeses since a very long time, actually. So, yes, we can definitely refer to them as Alpine cheeses.
Now, how old is the company? And the company, just to clarify, is Monte Trentini, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. So Monte Trentini, the history of Monte Trentini goes back to 1925. So that's the year when my great-grandfather started producing cheese. He was actually producing cheese in a small mountain hut in the Asiago Plateau, which is close to here. And he was just a little boy, so he was just doing it for fun during the summer. But then, of course, the whole family had to move from the mountains down near Verona. And when they got there, so my great-grandfather wanted to continue the cheese making. So he started working in the local cheese dairy. And after him, my grandfather, he wanted to do the same. So they both worked in the same local dairy. And then what happened is that my grandfather, he wanted to go back to the mountains. So he felt this need to go back to his roots. So that's why he tried to find a place to build his own company, and he found that place in Enego, which is a small town close to where I am right now. It's just like 20 minutes by car. And there in Enego, he built our first owned dairy, which is called the Caseificio Finco. So that's actually where the legacy really started, actually, so in Enego. And then through the years, the company grew, and my father and his brothers and sisters, they decided that they want to grow more. So they found another place here in Grigno, where I am, and
wow.
They built the Monte Trentini as it is right now. So we grew a lot through the years, from just like a small passion of my great-grandfather to a very big company making cheese in the Dolomites.
Wow. And the cheese-making history in the region goes back a long way because of the terroir, right?
Exactly, yes. So before us, basically, a lot of the people made cheese because we have a lot of pastures, and especially during the summer months up in the mountains, we have like great fields where cows can grow and can graze the grass, basically. So it is very, it has always been very important for the community here, the cheese making and growing of animals, of cows. So it's definitely something that's very typical of our community.
Now, was it all cow's milk?
Yes. Talking about ourselves, for Monte Trentini, we only process cow's milk, so all our cheeses are made with cow's milk. But like in a region, in our territory, there are some small farms that produce also other type of cheeses with like a mix of both goat and cow milk or just goat milk. But we decided through the years to focus only on cow milk.
I see. Now, is your proximity in the north of Italy, does it like to say Switzerland or Austria, does it actually, is that part of the reason why cheese making is so popular there?
It can be because, like here in the past, a lot of people were talking in German, so we definitely have some Austrian influence. In fact, just maybe a funny story, but I grew up here, and here it's mandatory for all kids to learn German as a second language.
Oh, really?
So once you turn 6 years old, in school you start learning German, which is not very common throughout Italy. Actually, it's not common. It only happens here. So yes, German before English.
Interesting. I was very surprised in Greece to find out that of course, the first language is Greek, and then the second language frequently was either Italian or German. I mean, that had to do with the geopolitical stuff, obviously, wars and
Yeah,
things.
of course.
So, now, what, I mean, all of a sudden I've gotten a lot of information about Alpine cheeses. Is there a push to make it more recognizable as a regional style?
Usually, like Alpine cheeses are more yellow in color. That's because when cows are able to graze outside in the mountains, there are more flowers. So the milk tends to be a little bit more yellow and more buttery, let's say. So you can look at the cheese and you can maybe guess if it's from the Alpine region because of this. And then, of course, the flavor as well. So if the cheese is made in the Alpine region, again, because of how cows eat, they usually eat, as I said before, more grass and more flowers. So the flavor of the cheese tends to be more aromatic with respect to maybe some cheeses which are more salty in taste that maybe are produced like in the center of Italy.
I'll be darned. Okay. Well, I mean, they're very high quality cheeses. I mean, are the processes different in your area or not?
Can you repeat the question? Because I lost a little bit of it.
Is the process, the cheese making process, different in the Alpine area?
Well, not really, because us Italians are very, we like traditions very much. So the cheese making process, it can differ a little bit from region to region, from area to area, but as I said, we are very traditional. So we know that in order to make good quality cheese, we need to respect this tradition and respect how people before us made the cheese. So you can definitely maybe find the difference in terms of, different companies, that maybe some of the companies are more a little bit more technologically advanced, so they use more robots in order to help employees with the production, while other companies, they are more focused on the tradition, so they make everything very, very artisanal. And then it depends on the type of cheese that you're making, because, for example, we are producers of Grana Padano, and in Grana Padano, the whole technique of production, the whole process is very, very artisanal. So everything is made by hand. There is very, very little intervention with like mechanical or robots or technologies and innovations. So it actually also depends on the type of cheese that you make. Us ourselves, for Monti Trentini, we try to combine the two. So we of course value the tradition of cheese making and how cheese was made in the past. But of course, We also try to integrate some technology and some innovation with the goal to help our employees to make better cheese, basically. So that's our goal, our objective.
How many different types of cheeses do you make?
Oh, we make a lot. We actually make more than 30 types of cheeses. The most famous ones that we have, as I said before, is Grana Padano, which is known
all
over the world.
That's very important. Big cheese.
Yeah, it is very important. Mm-hmm. It always makes a statement when we also open, sometimes when we have events or parties, we always open up a wheel and we let people carve inside the cheese and take a piece of the cheese. It's very, very, it's like the star of the show every time.
Wow.
But yes, we make Grana Padano, and then of course we make Asiago cheese, the traditional one, so the one which was originally made right in this region where we are. And then we make, for example, some of the products which are really loved in the United States, for example, are the cacciotta with truffle. So it's a small cheese.
Right.
Fresh,
that was good. Very good.
Oh, you had it, right?
I ate that one first.
Yeah,
oh, really?
That.
Which one did you like it?
I like the truffle one.
You like the truffle? Yes, because our truffle cheese, it's you can definitely feel the truffle, but it's still very mild and sweet. So it's not that the truffle is overpowering the cheese. So that's something that I really like about our truffle cheese.
Yeah, it's very different from the truffle cheese that we had.
We had a friend who was wine dealer, and he sourced truffle cheese in the Piemonte region.
Uh-huh.
Much
maybe
stronger
Piemonte,
truffle.
But also I think because in Piemonte they usually make it with goat milk. So maybe you had a truffle cheese with goat and not with cow, because usually what happens is with goat you have a stronger taste, while with cow you usually have a sweeter and milder taste. So it depends what you like best.
One of the names that's very familiar to me when I think of Italian cheese is provolone. I'm not sure I'm
provolone.
Pronouncing it correct.
Mm-hmm.
We had
that's
too.
Correct.
There's still some
of that
left.
Yeah, that's also one of the cheese. Uh-huh.
Huh.
Yeah, we also produce provolone. We have different kinds of provolone. So we have the mild, we have the sharp, which is the one that you tasted. And we also make a type of provolone, which is smoked. So basically we have this very, very big oven, and we use real wood to make the to smoke the product. It's very good, and you can definitely feel some of the like this the smoke, but it's still very mild, so it's not pungent on your tongue, and it's perfect if you want to have like a sandwich or if you want to have like a panini, Italian panini style. Then this is my go-to. So.
Mm-hmm. Now we talked to someone before who was making cheese on the Austrian side of the your region, I think.
Uh-huh.
But they did something unusual, moving their herds around. So during the summertime, they would have their cows in a particular area, and other times of the year, they would be not.
Well, that's the what's it called, the trans what? I mean, like they do on the birds.
you're talking about the Transumanza, so where they take the cows down
That's
in the valley up to the mountains, and then from the mountains again down to the farm. Yeah,
they do that a lot of places, actually. They do that in Spain as well.
Do you do that, or does someone who supplies you with the milk you need to make cheese?
So we actually only have very few cows that are owned by us. So everything, all the other milk, we buy from small farms that are located in our territory. So we collaborate with about 130-140 small farms, which are around Trentino and Veneto as well. And then they do, of course, the Transumanza. So they do this very particular tradition where during September or October, depends if it's very still warm or if it's very cold already, but usually it's like in the end of September, they take the cows, which have been staying up in the mountains all summer long. They take the cows from there and they just walk them back down to the valley where they're going to stay during the winter. We don't do it personally. We just participate with the farms because, as I said, we don't have the cows. We buy the milk from the farms that collaborate with us.
Now, is your cheese sold all over Italy and outside of Italy as well?
Oh, yeah. We sell our cheese in all Italy and in Europe as well. So, for example, in states like in countries like Germany, France, UK, Spain, but we also sell it worldwide. So you can find Monti Trentini cheeses in the United States, in Canada, in Mexico, Colombia, Peru. But you can also find them in Australia. You can also find it in the in Saudi Arabia. So you can definitely find our cheeses everywhere. Basically, we are not actually developing the Chinese market, which is something that we need to focus on. But everywhere else in the world, you can find our products.
Well, what market aren't you developing?
The Chinese.
Chinese. You know, I understand, by the way, that that's a very hot market for cheese. China, which is very untypical.
It is, but it wasn't like in the past. It was difficult because, you know, they didn't have the culture. They didn't know how to consume cheese. They didn't know how to eat cheese. But now they know and they want more. So it's definitely something that we can develop more. In the past, we decided to focus more on the Latin American countries. So as I said, Mexico, Colombia, Peru, Brazil as well. And so we decided to focus on that part of the world and not to go into the Asian countries because there was this cultural difficulty. But nowadays, there is high demand of cheese over there.
Right. Well, you've got your work cut out for you because there's so many cheeses in the world. I mean, what do you think is the biggest outstanding characteristic of your cheeses, Alpine cheeses, that makes them highly competitive?
I think it's the quality, first of all, because as like a mantra for ourselves and everybody that works for us, we want our cheeses to have the best quality, starting from the raw milk until the very aged wheel. So we want the quality to go throughout the whole production process. And then, of course, what I think makes a difference is the people. So us ourselves, we first of all are a family because the company is still family owned, and being a family enables the company to have still have a very, very important presence in the company. So every day I look at the window and I see my dad and his brothers just, you know, walking up and down and trying to manage the company in the best way possible. So I think what makes us different is definitely the quality and the passion that our family makes, the passion that our family puts inside the company. And you can definitely feel it in our cheeses as well.
Now, does your area where you make cheese, does it also do wine?
Yes, we make wine here. We have the Trento DOC, which uh-huh. is like the it's similar to the Prosecco, let's say.
Okay.
So it's a sparkling wine. And then we have, for example, the Chardonnay, we have the Sauvignon, we have the Teroldego. Trentino Alto Adige is a very important area for wine producers. So definitely, yeah, you can definitely have like amazing pairings with cheese and wine here.
Yeah. What's your biggest, closest city that would be recognizable to our listeners?
What is my, is, because I lost you a little bit, so what was the question again?
What is the biggest city near where you are? Yes.
Oh,
that
so
our listeners would recognize.
So it's going to be either Trento, which is very close, but the biggest city that is close to us is Venice. So in an hour and a half by car, you can be directly in Venice, very close. We're like in the middle from Venice and Austria. So you can definitely, if you wake up and want to go to the seaside, you can go to Venice. You wake up and you want to go skiing, you can go to Austria. But, yeah.
Well, you're a very capable spokesperson for your region and your cheese.
Thank you.
So I guess you kind of grew up with it, right?
Yeah, I grew up here. I grew up with the company because ever since I was a little girl, I was just, you know, running around and playing here. And I remember even on the weekends, my dad, he was just calling me and my brother and said, "Oh, come on, let's go to the plant and see what cheese are doing." So we were just coming down and see if everything was okay. And I was just a little girl, so I definitely grew up here.
Well, it's a wonderful area. I mean, we've been in that area many times, and it's really a lovely mm-hmm. area. And so many diverse products. And do you do e-commerce for selling your cheeses? Can our listeners get your cheeses online?
So we don't have a direct e-commerce site online, but you can definitely find our products. For example, online you can find them at almagourmet.com, which is a website which has a variety of Italian products. And ourselves, our products are inside that as well. Otherwise, you can find our products in some of the retail chains. So you can sometimes find us in Costco or Albertsons. Depends on where you are. And then sometimes we go also inside other retail chains. For example, during the December month, we were in Italy. In New York, so we were there for the whole December month and for the festive season.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, I've gotten a lot more information about your regional cheeses, so I imagine you're on a new, bigger promotional flow of trying to market your cheeses. Is that correct?
We are trying to promote all of our cheeses basically throughout the especially in the United States market.
As I said,
the Trentino region has a lot of products, and also with wines, we try to collaborate also with winemakers to communicate that you can have like a deep dive of our region and just try to feel and live like us, but just by eating a piece of cheese or sipping a glass of milk from our region.
Well, Maria, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Your last name, Finco, is that any relationship to the Spanish word for like farm, is finca?
Not really, no, because here finco it comes from a word in dialect which means blind, and it also is a name of a bird.
So I think like a finch.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So in the past, since our last name is also, it also comes from the a typical language which was talked only here in this region in the past, which was a mix of Italian and German, and it comes probably from there, but we tried to figure out from where exactly and what's the meaning behind it, but we couldn't find it. So it either has something to do that maybe somebody in our family in the past was blind, and therefore it was given like a nickname of Finco, which meant, as I said, blind, or it has something to do with the bird, but we're not sure.
Interesting. Well, anyhow, it was delightful talking to you. It makes me anxious to return to Italy, which we love a lot. So, and your cheeses
if
are wonderful.
Oh, if you do come. Oh, thank you
Pardon?
So much. If you do come to Italy,
yeah,
please come see us at our company. I will definitely give you a little tour of the company and maybe also of the territory as well.
That's wonderful. Okay, well, next time then. Again, thank you. And listeners, remember the Monte Trentini and they're good cheeses, and we enjoy them a lot. And much success, continued success in your company.
Thank you,
Maria.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
You were wonderful. Thank you. Ciao.
Thank you. Ciao.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Our listeners, we're going to be talking to Dina DiCenzo and about her company, Rind, which it gets a little complicated, but I'm going to ask Dina to clarify what the different offshoots of the company and the different products are. To give an overview, we're talking vegan cheeses here. And give us a little history, Dina.
Sure.
I mean, how did all this start? Where are you located? Are you in New York?
Yes, we are located in the Brooklyn Army Terminal. Rind is the name of our company, and then we've got two brand labels underneath it. Rind by Dina and Joshua. Joshua is my business partner, and under that label, we make our finer charcuterie board style cheeses. We have our aged cheeses, which are a cam blue, which is a camembert blue mix, and then we have a camembert, but we don't currently make that just due to space restraints. And so then on the our other brand is Veggie Underground, and that is our you know, more commodity cheese, the slices, the shreds, and, you know, it melts extremely well. It tastes like cheese, and it's the only one on the market that is made with real vegetable purees. So it's made, we have carrot, a parsnip, and a red bell pepper in that line.
You know, I can tell that I can taste the veggies in the cheese. I don't know if that's intentional or not.
Yeah, everyone tastes, you know, a different level of them. So some people actually get upset that there's not more vegetable in it because they want it to taste like carrot or whatever vegetable. And then other people are like, this tastes just like dairy. So, you know, it runs the gamut. So
parsnip is a rather an unusual choice, I would have thought, for veggie underground or veggie above ground, for that matter. Why parsnips?
Why parsnip? Because it does have kind of a like a little spicy bite to it. So sometimes cheeses do have that kind of bite, and so that's why we wanted to go with a parsnip.
Well, you know, I'm trying to get a handle on this whole operation. You are in Brooklyn, New York, isn't it?
Yes. We're located in the Brooklyn Army Terminal, and so, you know, it's, the abbreviation is BAT, so we, you know, call our cheese cave here the Bat Cave, and we've been here for several years. My business partner is Joshua Catcher, and we both are longtime vegans, and I had been making cheese at home on my own for several years, and he tasted something through a mutual friend that I had made, and he contacted me and said, this is what the market's missing, because there really weren't any aged cheeses available on the market at that point. So, you know, we spent another year or so in R&D, maybe up to almost 2 years possibly, and then launched officially in January of 2018. And
your timing is impeccable.
Yeah, well, we kind of let it. So, you know, without us, I think not a lot of people would be doing what they're doing.
Who was the character who made the delivery? I mean,
Greg. Greg Langle. So I've known Greg since undergraduate.
It's fairly unusual to get cheese hand delivered.
What, did you go to school in Pittsburgh?
No, we went to school at University of Arizona in Tucson, and we met on the very first day of class in August of 1987. So very first class, very first day of school, and it was an 8 a.m. art class. And, you know, we met there, and we've been friends ever since. So we've known each other a long time. And we both happened to go vegan, even though we had kind of you know, parted ways for a few years. You know, we lost touch for a few years just because we were living on different coasts. And but when we caught up with each other again, we were both vegan. So,
funny.
You know, it was great to have another vegan in a senior position at our company. So, you know, that way our missions are all aligned, and we all, you know, want to, you know, do best by the vegan community, because we are a part of it, and we do, you know, care a lot about what products are being put out there, because you really only get one chance to get people's attention.
That's true.
Well, now why can't I get to say anything?
You can say anything you want.
I ate the fucking cheese.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Robin.
Sometimes I get obstreperous. the cheese that I like the best was the one that's it's from an rind label.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a blue cheese.
Yeah.
It's an interesting blue cheese. Tell our listeners some more about what makes it as unusual as it is.
Well, we use methods used by the dairy industry to make blue cheese, only our base is different. So our base is a cashew tofu base, and we inoculate it with the Roqueforti cultures, and we let it age in our cave for several weeks and then ship it on out. So you actually
make it?
Yes, yeah, I make it.
But you make it out of milk you buy from some other person?
We do everything in-house. So
you make your own cashew milk even?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
But where are the cows?
They're happily at a sanctuary, safely put away from people and their dirty mouths.
Okay. So they're somewhere fairly close.
Yeah, so it's only cashews and tofu.
Yeah, rather, you're skipping a point here. There aren't any cows. They're nuts.
I knew I was confused. Now, let me go.
I'm telling you, Dina, we were doing a review, an interview of a vegetarian cookbook, and Peter asked the author to comment on the chicken soup.
Well, now, hold on a minute. Let me go on to my next question. Because the name of the one that's tomato-y.
The Nduja, yes.
Yeah, the Nduja. Now, I know Nduja as being made into salumis.
Yes.
It's very popular in Calabria, I think.
It is, yes. So
you did something entirely different because,
yeah.
However hard I try, I can't get you to eat something that has salami in it, I guess.
Right. So that is our Nduja spread is a collaboration with our neighbors, City Saucery. They are actually on the third floor of our building here in Brooklyn Army Terminal, and they make pasta sauces as well as a Calabrian chili sauce and their vegan Nduja sauce, which is what we use in the spread. So it gives people a little flavor of, you know, the Nduja with the cheese.
Really, so when I look at the label and it's red, the color of tomatoes, and I see in the bottom, tiny piece in the bottom, that it's Nduja, I can't pronounce it, but at least I know what it is.
Yeah, but I mean, the Nduja is an Italian sausage that's spreadable.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But what I do is I take the lid off, and then I go at it with a knife, and I take a piece and I spread it on a cracker.
Yeah, and we actually have. Yeah, it is. Yeah, and we also have a customer, Fresh Fix, up in Buffalo, New York. They've been using it for their pizzas, so you know they use it in place of the sauce on the pizza. Yeah.
Well, you know, before we started the official recording of the interview, I had you run through your company structure. It might be useful if our listeners got to hear that.
Sure.
Ryan, do that for us.
Yeah, it's really just me and my business partner, Joshua, and then Greg is in charge of the one who did the delivery to you. He's in charge of marketing, sales, logistics, facing the public sort of issues. And so I am in charge of the factory and making stuff and R&D, that sort of thing. And Joshua does all the photography and design work, along with we've been lucky to work with a couple of excellent designers. So Todd Oldham did our original packaging for our aged and spreads, and then Jennifer Kwan had done our Veggie Underground designs.
Yeah, I like the little circle of what would you call it, sweetheart? It's like ceramic.
Oh, yeah. The containers that they spread cheese, the spreadable cheese, comes in.
Oh.
Peter rescued one of them to use it as a spoon rest on the counter next to the stove.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good that you're reusing things.
So that's what I do too.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but all of these different functions in your... with products in your company have different names. So could you just let our listeners know what they are so they can identify what they're getting when they're ordering?
Sure. So we have our Rhine aged cheese, and that comes in a blue, a cam blue, an herb, a paprika, and a lapsang. And then we have our spreads, which are also under the Rhine brand, and that those come in a classic flavor, which is just like a plain, and then we have herb, lapsang, and horseradish, and douya, cranberry, currant, bees, which is a collaboration between Melody Honey. It's a vegan honey company.
How can you have a vegan honey company?
Melody has been working hard on their, I think they use a bioreactor is what they call it. It's been a while since I've seen the technology at work, but they create it, they manufacture it from plant-based ingredients, so, and it tastes just
so
like
So it has nothing really to do with bees, because you can't...
No.
Because some vegans do not have, do not even eat honey.
Correct, exactly.
But you can still eat it with a knife and crackers.
Yes, you can use your knife and cracker, just like the Induya. And then our final product is the Veggie Underground, which is the slices. So.
Okay, and some of those flavors?
And those are parsnip, carrot, and red bell pepper.
Right. Parsnip is the one that astounded Peter the most, I think. I mean, we eat a lot of parsnips, but most people don't in America.
Right. Yeah.
I liked all the flavors of Veggie Underground too, but I'm glad I understand now more about the sauce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually all of
why it's called what it is. Why it's called what it's called.
Yeah, and those the Veggie Underground is also the everything is grown here in the U.S. and they're made here in the U.S. Whereas a lot of our competitors are shipped over from Greece and other places in Europe. So.
You mean cheeses?
Yeah, the vegan cheeses, vegan cheese competitors for the slices.
Okay.
And how big a market is it? I mean, just to back up a little bit, when I've interviewed vegans. Mm-hmm. Or would-be vegans, they always come to the point where they say the hardest thing to give up was cheese.
Right, and that's because it does bind to opioid receptors. So there are...
Are you kidding?
Really? That's why it's literally addictive. And that
cheese
is, so
is
that,
addictive?
Yeah, and that's why it's hard to give up. So it has those qualities because it encourages the baby cow to want to, you know, eat from the mother. And that's why it's a evolutionary thing for animals. Humans too, you know, we've got oxytocin, which, you know, gets the bond between the mother and baby. So that's, you know, all of them have these mechanisms to encourage bonding and feeding between the baby and the mother.
I'm absolutely amazed.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure it out. Cheese is addictive. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to figure out where the cows are.
Now, I mentioned to you before, a lot of cheese people want to present the cheese so it tastes exactly like cheese. Of course, what you're saying about the addiction explains a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that one of the differentiating factors of your cheese is that you could taste the veggies in them. And you say that's not a bad thing.
Right. We don't think it's a bad thing at all. It is what it is. And it's a great replacement. You know, it melts, it performs like cheese, and, you know, in products, it actually enhances them, and it offers a little bit of nutritional value versus other competitors. So, we wanted to put the plant back in plant-based cheese.
Am I right in thinking that somewhere in the one that has honey in it, there are also some herbs?
Say what? I'm sorry.
Are there also some herbs in the container?
Herbs.
Oh, herbs. In our herb flavored one, there are herbs. The lapsang is
okay,
smoky tea. The Lapsang is a smoky tea flavor. And then, you know, the Nduja, of course, there's some herbs in there to flavor the Nduja.
You know, I'm trying to figure out how big is this market? How many competitors do you have in the vegan cheese? I mean, I know from vegan pizza that it's vegan cheese is a big thing.
Right.
But I don't know the scope. How many people produce vegan cheese?
There are a lot of major companies, you know, much like the vegan meat space, you know, all of the meat packers, you know, the traditional meat packers are moving into the vegan space because there is a high demand, you know. The more studies that come out showing the connection between, you know, diabetes and cardiovascular disease and cancers caused by dairy and meat, you know, and the fact that they are so harsh on the environment and they're destroying the planet. And, you know, even now it's hard for planes to fly because they've done so much damage to, you know, the climate. So, you know, there's more turbulence and it's harder to, you know, have a smooth flight. Aside from the Boeing problems, but like, you know, they've really noticed that the way that America, well, not just America, the world has been eating has to change. There's not enough room, you know, having to grow, you know, create space to grow, you know, to have farms, meat farms, you know, they were clearing the Amazon forest to make room for that, and that's the lungs of the planet. So this can't go on. We're going to kill ourselves basically over, you know, meat and dairy. And so I think the big corporations are now becoming more aware of this, and they're trying to move into the vegan space. So there are a lot of brands that are coming out into the market, and it's great to have more options, but unfortunately a lot of them just don't care what it tastes like because they're just in a rush to get to the market. So it's been turning off a lot of potential customers. And so, you know, we have seen a lot of them kind of, you know, changing their operations, changing their formulations, closing down. You know, so I think they're going to continue to launch new products, and because there's still a whole world of cheeses out there that need to be made vegan and offered vegan, and you know, we are one of the companies working on that. Well, we're working on every, like, we don't have a Parmesan, we don't have a Gouda, we don't have you know, cheddar, and we don't have a lot of these because the cultures that are used to make them are grown on a dairy substrate. And so that's why we're limited to the blue and the cam blue right now. You know, anything with camembert and blue can and are grown on vegan substrates. But the rest of them, they need to be either specially made or, you know, some of the companies are working on them, but they haven't launched them yet. So, you know, like Swiss is hard because you also need the propionic bacteria, and that is not vegan yet. So,
well, we're missing one item in our conversation, and that is where people who are vegetarian and therefore are interested in this product range of yours, where can people get it?
In the Pittsburgh area, you can find us at the East End Co-op.
Yeah, I have a note for that, actually, that I was going to mention. But, I mean, are you online as well?
If our retailers are online, then yes. But it really just depends. So, you know, there are stores that have Instacart, so we're online with them in some places if they've set it up. We are found all across the U.S., more heavily so on the coasts, you know, like California, and New York, really. But you can find us, you know, in Atlanta. You can find us in Portland, and, you know.
So, but your future vision is to approach each of these categories of cheese, such as, say, a grating cheese, like a Parmesan, and veganize it.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. And but you're going to limit it to existing cheeses.
I mean, the cultures that are grown on a vegan substrate is what has been limiting growth. Right now, what you'll find is if someone has a Gouda flavor, it's flavored with like garlic or something, which isn't really the same, you know.
Well, I mean, it sort of boggles my mind. I mean, you're talking not just about a company with a vegan product. You're talking about a whole reconstruction of human beings' relationship to diet.
Exactly. Yeah, because we are, like, diet drives human health. It drives environmental health. It drives, you know, how people treat even other people and animals. You know, it's more empathetic. It's kinder. It's, you know, gentler. It makes you stronger too. Because if you're poisoning yourself with what you're eating, then, you know, you're always going to have health problems and be unhappy, and, you know, and then there's the cruelty to animals and the planet. So, you know, it's a holistic approach to eating and living.
Well, keep it up. Somebody has to do it, and
right.
you're doing it. And we're very impressed.
Thank you. We
hope one day you'll crack the big fella Whole Foods, and then you.
Oh, we're in Whole Foods.
You're going to become even more famous.
And yeah.
We'll be able to tell the world that we talk to these people, and they're a little bit crazy, but their product is really good.
Thank you so much.
Oh, Dina. Okay, listeners, again, the key company name is, a brand name is Rind, this R-I-N-D, all caps?
Yes, all caps.
All caps. And these people are taking on the world. I mean, this is not a small operation. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
What about you and your development and how you grew up put you in this kind of a position?
I don't know. I wonder what happened myself.
There you go.
So you don't know.
You haven't figured it out yet, huh?
No. I mean, I think maybe it's just because I grew up, you know, in the 80s, which was like, you know, kind of when there was a lot of, like, nonconformity and you know, making your own path and you know, kind of defining, you know, genres, like whether it was in music or behaviors, you know. So I think maybe just growing up.
So it's a generational thing, you think?
Possibly. I think some of those mindsets and behaviors can carry over, you know. There's a thread of that through every generation, but I feel like it was more pronounced maybe in the 80s than others, you know.
Yeah, all I can think of in the 80s is what ugly clothes we wore.
No, it was hideous. But we were the first to really have something really hideous.
Bad clothes, really bad. Yeah. Well, this has been a really even more enlightening conversation than I anticipated. Our listeners, again, you've been listening to Dina. Do you do the Italian?
Yeah.
Kenzo. Okay,
yeah,
me too.
Yeah, I prefer that. Thank you.
And of Rind. And look for this product. And believe me, I am not vegan, but I think your flavors are wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, it's been fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
Greg we said hello.
I will.
Thank you, Dina.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one. Bye.